I'd like to, first of all, just to ask if perhaps some of you could abandon the wall, and perhaps we could move in a little bit closer, so that it's easier for us to really connect with you, and for you to connect with us, and just so that we don't have to speak quite as loudly, and
so that we're speaking to people and not holes.
space here. We promise this isn't a Zen retreat, so we don't have a big stick up here to hit you with. And
if you really do need the wall, then maybe the people on
and
the very edges could move
could
in a
now
bit.
Could move in and fill in the spaces. Yeah. Of course, if you have a back problem, or if you have some kind of a problem like that, or something that makes it really difficult to sit, then by all means, stay at the wall, but as much as possible. So the meditation is about liberation of body, mind, and heart. And so perhaps this moving away from the wall is the first liberation, freeing ourselves from leaning on something and learning how to sit on our own, to be on our own and independent. So I'd like to welcome everyone here, and it's really a delight to be here and to be able to spend these days with you all. Is that a car alarm? So I might just give a very brief introduction. I'm not sure how much any of you know about Peggy and I. So my name is Norman, and in terms of my meditation background, I did my first meditation retreat in 1971 in India, and I've been practicing since then with a number of different Buddhist teachers and different Hindu teachers and in different traditions. And I've been leading retreats like this and leading meditation groups since 1986 in different parts of the world, different countries. And Peggy has been participating in retreats since 1985 and sitting many retreats, and then a long, illustrious career as a retreat organizer and manager, and for the past year has been assisting on retreats. So again, for myself, it really is a pleasure and a privilege and a delight to be here. The first retreat that I did in 1971, I did in India, and I went to India directly from Israel, and that was my only previous visit to Israel. And and at that time I was just out of university, just finished university, and I was traveling around in Europe, and for North Americans traveling in Europe at that time, one of the kind of things to do when you went through your checklist of what to do when you were traveling in Europe, one of the things to do was to come to Israel and work on a kibbutz. So that's what I did. And I came and spent 3 months working on a kibbutz here in Israel. And then following that, I flew to Istanbul and then went overland to India. And shortly after arriving in India, did my first retreat. And one of the real joys for me of of coming to Israel this time was yesterday. We had quite a tour, a very full day touring the Galilee and the Upper Galilee, and I was able to go back to the kibbutz where I stayed so many years ago, and it was really quite wonderful as we came over the hills and started coming down from the hills above Kiryat Shmona to look out over the valley and see the kibbutz there. And it was really wonderful to have a sense, even though I was only there for 3 months, it was quite interesting to see that there was a really sense for me of coming home, and really feeling a connection with the kibbutz and with the valley and with the land. And it's really, and for a large part for that reason, for that feeling, and also just for being in Israel again, and especially being on retreat. It's really a joy to be here, so I'd like to thank you all for making this possible. So in coming to Israel this time after so many years and traveling around in the last few days and visiting different places and visiting the kibbutz and driving through the hills, one thing that has really struck me is how much in India no, that was a few weeks ago, this is Israel, how much Israel has changed materially in the years since 1971. And of course I noticed that there's a lot more houses and bigger houses, and the houses are occupying much more of the country. And I noticed that there's far more cars and bigger cars, and I noticed that the Eged buses look much more comfortable than they did in 1971, and I notice just in so many different ways the material progress, the material advancement in Israel. And yet in looking around, in looking through the country and being here, I also noticed, first morning in Tel Aviv, I noticed that there were homeless people, which I don't remember seeing in 1971. And I noticed that there is a lot more housing, a lot more crowding, that the country is getting more crowded. I noticed a lot more plastic bags around and a lot more garbage in the environment. I noticed more haze and mist and perhaps smog. And so I see that with the progress and with the advancement, there's also problems showing. And of course I'm aware, as certainly all of you are probably much more aware of it than I am, of the ongoing political instability and the social instability, the problems with immigrants and immigration and the crowding and the employment situation and all that. And so I see that there's been, in one sense, there's been progress, but in many ways there are problems associated with it. And I think those of you living in Israel are probably very aware of this. And certainly it's not unique to Israel. Certainly we see the same situation very much, and perhaps even more so in India. And in the West we also see the same kinds of problems. And I think that if we were to ask the question, why do we come to a meditation retreat? Why are we interested in meditation? Of course, there would be many different answers. Each of us would give our own answer. There would be many different answers. But I think to a very large extent, it would mostly come down to an awareness that even with the material progress, even with the so-called improvement of life, there's still some dissatisfaction. There's still unhappiness. There's still a sense of an absence of peace in our lives. And I think for most of us, coming to a retreat and coming to meditation is a searching for something which will give us a sense of happiness and of peace, a sense of well-being. And so we come to a meditation retreat with this motivation, with this intention. And I think also if we look at our lives to a large extent, to, of course, to varying degrees, but probably most of us have come to some realization that we can't rely very much on the outer world to change in some dramatic way that's suddenly going to bring us some peace and some happiness. The outer world, we can see, is to a very large extent out of our control, and we just can't rely on it. And so we come to meditation with some degree of understanding, I think, that if we want to find some real peace and some real happiness, we have to look within ourselves. We have to look within ourselves. And this is what the meditation is. The meditation is a looking within ourselves to find where the unsatisfactoriness is, to find where our suffering in life is, and to find a way to come to some understanding, to some insight, which will end this, which will bring this unsatisfactoriness to an end. And in bringing that to an end, knowing for ourselves peace and happiness and joy and love. So this meditation, which we will be sharing in and engaging in and practicing and developing and exploring over the next 5 days, is called Vipassana. And Vipassana is a word which comes from Sanskrit and from Pali, which is the language the Buddha spoke. And Vipassana is a word which means insight. And so the purpose of the meditation, the intention of the meditation, is to cultivate this insight which liberates us from our suffering. This insight which liberates us from the experience of unsatisfactoriness, the experience of separateness, the experience of helplessness, of hopelessness, of our situation, whether inwardly or outwardly. And so in the meditation, we will use over the next few days a number of different techniques, different forms, to help us to really explore within ourselves, to explore in a way that hopefully we can come to some insight, some understanding of who we are, the nature of ourself, the nature of who we are, and the real nature, the actual nature of our relationship to the world. So we come on a retreat with this intention, with this purpose, with the motivation to explore ourselves, to explore our unsatisfactoriness experience of life, to explore who we are. And in that exploration, to see if we can find, if we can discover, if we can uncover or recover or rediscover the wholeness and the well-being and the happiness and the joy and the love and the connection which is within us in each and every moment. So retreat is a situation, a set of conditions, a set of circumstances which we set up, which we create to facilitate and to support this process, to support this process of looking within. And certainly here in Israel and in this area, there is a long history of people going on retreat, spending time in the mountains and in the deserts, looking within themselves, exploring, and in that looking within, discovering the nature of self and the nature of relationship to the world. And so we, in coming to this retreat, in coming here, we continue with this long tradition, and we participate in this tradition. And so the retreat has a number of aspects to it. There are a number of conditions which we use in the retreat to help support this. And Peggy will speak a little bit about some of these supports, some of these guidelines which we use to help us in this exploration.
I just also want to say, please forgive us for our inadequacy of the Hebrew language. I wish we could speak to you in your language, and I hope that we can speak slowly enough and clearly enough to be understood. And if not, as I think was said during the manager's talk, we will try to provide whatever support is needed so that communication is understood. So here we are, a rather large number of people living together for 5 days. And most of us choose to live somewhat independently. So this can be a stress if we don't do it with awareness. And in order to support ourselves and each other in the practice, in order to support us living in harmony and with awareness, there are precepts or guidelines, ethical guidelines, that we agree to in order to live together in harmony. The Buddha set forth many, many precepts originally for the monks in the monasteries to support their living together and being in practice together. And the first 5 of those have become the standard for lay people, for people like us who are doing practice together. And they aren't vows like "thou shalt not kill." Rather, it's a gentle agreement. We agree to these precepts. We have a serious intention to live by them, and we try to use the precepts as part of the practice here, just as during the meditation practice, we focus our attention or awareness on the breath, and sometimes, many times, the awareness shifts away to a thought or a body sensation, and in that moment of awareness, we gently bring the attention back to the breath, and that's the way to relate to the precepts. If you notice that you have forgotten one of the precepts or acted in a way other than that, just very gently make the commitment again, without judgment, without criticism, with a gentleness and an acceptance. So these 5 precepts. The first one: I agree not to engage in violence. I agree to live in harmony with all living beings, including myself, with all of us here and in the retreat center, with the creatures, with the environment. I agree, I undertake, I have the intention to refrain from violence. And in so doing, this shows a real respect for life. on a more subtle level, we can use the precept to bring awareness even to the impulse to violence, to the thought of violence. Like when a mosquito starts buzzing around and there's that impulse to smash it. So watch the impulse and see if we can bring awareness to that and to refrain from violence. The second precept is I agree not to steal, not to take anything which has not been freely given. This can mean not taking a cushion that you see lying around that may be somebody else's. This can mean not taking more than your share of food on the line in the dining room, because in so doing, you might be stealing food from someone at the end of the line. So watch the tendency, the inclination to greed, to desire, to wanting what I don't have, or to wanting more of what is given. The third precept, I agree not to engage in sexual activity while here on the retreat. We want to show respect for every individual here, to give space to even our partners and our friends. So it can also mean, this precept can also mean not interfering, even on a very subtle level, with anyone. It can mean not staring at someone, not trying to make contact, visual contact with someone, or not even making a gentle touch to someone who you care about, which you think of as being a support, but which to them may be an intrusion. So we can use this precept to also watch just the tendency for contact with friends. The fourth precept is to agree to speak truthfully with others and also with ourselves. And that one may be more difficult. On a subtle level, we can watch the tendency to exaggerate or to minimize or even to deny the truth of what is, the truth of things. So with this precept, we bring awareness to our speech and to truth. And the fifth precept is I agree not to use intoxicants while on the retreat. I agree not to take alcohol, not to smoke, not to take any drugs, except, of course, medicine that you need to take for illnesses. And this precept is the intention not to cloud the mind. This retreat is about, meditation is about awareness, about seeing things as they are. So we make the intention not to cloud the mind or to engage in any form of addiction, any strong habits, to bring awareness to that. On a subtle level, this can even be reaching out for the comfort of a cup of tea when things are rough for us. The desire to telephone someone at home. The desire to have things the way they are at home, the way we find comfort and ease. To be with the familiar. So the precepts are the ethical foundation of the practice of living together here. And we use them as a support to practice.
So as Peggy mentioned, these precepts originally were intended for the monks and the nuns in the monasteries, and they actually developed interesting when the Buddha first started teaching and people first started coming to him and the first monks were ordained and the first nuns were ordained, there were no rules at all. Basically, people would just come and the Buddha would say, okay, here's the instructions, just go and practice. And of course, as more and more people came and started practicing and conditions changed, people's minds started acting up as they tend to do, and people got into, the monks and the nuns got into different situations and different things started happening, and then the Buddha started saying, well, wait a minute, maybe I better make a rule about this. And so first rule comes up, and then something else happens, and well, better make another rule about this one, and another rule comes. The rules, one by one, the rules got added on. And as Peggy mentioned, particularly the first five, because they apply not just to monks and nuns, but they really apply to everyone. If we want to live a life of happiness and peacefulness and harmony and to be able to live in the world with these qualities, then these first five precepts really are very important. And so in Asia now, in the Buddhist countries, it's certainly anyone doing a retreat would take these precepts for the period of the retreat. But it's also not at all uncommon for people to do a formal ceremony and take these precepts as precepts, as guidelines, as vows for everyday life. And so for the period of this retreat, we take these precepts as guidelines for practice, as tools for bringing mindfulness to how we're relating to ourselves, to other people, and to objects of the world. Another guideline, another support that we have in the retreat structure for the meditation, for this process of inquiring, of investigating, of exploring within ourselves, is silence. And so the retreat, as you've been told, is held in silence. And after all the talking that's gone on this evening already, and I know first evening of a retreat, it seems like there's a lot of information being given out and a lot of rules and a lot of this and that. And then we come to talking about silence, and it seems a little bit, what's this all about? But the silence is a real support for the practice. And as we've been traveling the past few days around the country, Peggy and I have both experienced and noticed in the countryside and in the land here, there really is a real stillness and a silence, a quality of stillness and silence in the land that isn't present in very many places that we've been to. And I think this sense of silence and stillness in the land is something in the history of the area which has had a very profound influence on the development of religion and spirituality in the area. And I think this sense of stillness and silence in the land has been a major contribution to this long tradition of people going off into the mountains and into the deserts and really exploring. And the stillness and the silence is a real support to just reducing or eliminating as much as possible the outer distractions and the outer pulls which we normally experience, and really allows us to go that much more deeply within ourselves. And so on the retreat, we really put much importance on the silence as a support for this looking within ourselves and exploring within. And the silence can very much give us a sense of being with ourselves. It can give us a sense of being alone. And yet, in the setting of the retreat, we can see that very much we have the support of everyone else. And so we're not alone. And we can also see that the silence, my experience of silence and my respect of the silence is very much dependent on the experiencing and the respect of the silence from each and every other person here. And so the silence isn't just my silence, and it's just not possible for me to be alone in the silence. If there's silence, it's because we're all together in it. And so we all participate in it, and we all contribute to it. And it's essential for each and every one of us to make it possible. And so the silence is a real support for this inquiry and for this process of meditation. And just to speak a little bit about what silence means, and we can talk about silence in two different aspects. And these two different aspects can be labeled as, and of course they're very interconnected and they affect one another, but we can identify them or classify them as outer silence and inner silence. And so outer silence most obviously means not talking. And not talking doesn't mean just not talking during the sitting periods. It means not talking. It simply means not talking. And so we spend these days together in this silence. And of course, if you're having some problem, if there's some question that comes up for you, some real difficulty, then of course to come and speak to myself or to Peggy, or to come and tell us that you really need to meet with us. And I think it's been mentioned that there will be opportunities for individual meetings as well as for small group meetings. And so the small group meetings, which has this been explained? No? Okay, so starting tomorrow we'll have meetings, and we'll meet with each of you in small groups, and we'll put up lists at some point tomorrow of small groups of 6 or 7 people in each group. And so when we put them up, we'll let you know, and you can just look, and it will have your name in a group and give a time for your small group meeting. And the group meetings will be, I'm a little bit disoriented here, on the grass just above, just up here. Okay, and you'll meet, each small group will have 2 meetings during the retreat, so you'll meet every second day. So some groups we'll meet with tomorrow, and then those who we don't meet with tomorrow we'll meet with the next day. And then the groups we meet with tomorrow we'll meet again with the day after that, and so on. So each group will have a meeting every second day. And these small group meetings will be an opportunity to ask any questions that you may have, or to check in and let us know how you're doing. And as well as that, there will be opportunity for individual meetings, and probably not tomorrow, but beginning the next day, we'll put up times with a space. And if you want to meet with either of us individually, you can just kind of put your initials in the space and then come to wherever we're having the individual meetings, which we haven't decided yet, but we'll let you know. And so you can come and speak with one of us individually to ask any questions, or if you're having any difficulties or anything that you're not clear about. But beyond that, with the silence, I would just also let you know that if those spaces are all filled in, but if something comes up for you and you really feel it's important to come and talk about it or to ask about it, then just to come and find myself or Peggy, and we'll give you a time. So not to feel that the keeping of the silence means that you just have to hold in anything that's going on or anything that's bothering you. Sometimes in this process of exploration, of inquiry, of examination within ourselves, something comes up and we can bring our attention to it, and we can explore it, and we can come to some understanding for ourselves. But sometimes it's helpful to meet with someone and to to have a little bit of discussion, a little bit of verbal inquiry. And so that opportunity is very much here. With the silence, I would also say that the silence does mean not speaking, and sometimes this can be the most difficult part of it, is not speaking with partners or friends. And that urge can come up very strongly for many different reasons, and it's quite understandable. And so to really be watchful for this tendency, this urge. One of the developments I've noticed in Israel since 1971 is the cellular telephone. And it seems to be a national pastime to speak on the cellular telephone. And so being watchful for any urge to get on the phone. So being watchful for this. And also with this in the silence, if you do happen to notice someone and the person seems to be having some real difficulty, our natural urge, and it's really quite lovely and quite understandable, our natural urge is to want to help, to want to give some comfort to a person, to help a person. But what I would say is, if you notice someone who seems to be having some difficulty, rather than going to that person, come and again to find myself or Peggy or one of the managers and just let us know, and then we can check in and make sure that the person is getting whatever they need. Okay, and so in that we all give support to each other in this process. So with outer silence also, sometimes on retreats, often people have these watch. Oh, here's my watch here. And often people have these watches set so that every hour there's a little beep. And so as a support to the outer silence, I would ask that everyone please make sure at the very least that the beepers and the alarms are turned off. And I would even actually go so far as to suggest that you leave the watches behind and not bring them at all into the meditation hall. So just a small contribution to the silence. And another contribution to the silence is just the stillness of the body. So sitting with as much stillness as possible, not moving around and getting up and walking around and coming in halfway through the sitting and going out before it's finished, but coming in within the first few minutes of a sitting period. And except, of course, if there's some emergency and you really have to go, to really have a commitment to stay right through until the end of each sitting. And of course, if there is a lot of discomfort in the body, if there's too much discomfort in the sitting posture, then tomorrow we'll speak more about working with pain and working with discomfort of the body. But if necessary, then just mindfully and slowly adjusting the posture as much as necessary. And then coming back to the meditation. If it's really uncomfortable and difficult to sit, then it's quite all right, even in the meditation hall, to stand. Just to slowly, mindfully, quietly stand up. And just bring attention to the body, just to the posture of just standing. And standing again with stillness and with quietness. And then at some point, if it feels right again, to just mindfully, slowly, quietly sit down and return to the sitting meditation. So the meditation hall is used exclusively for sitting and for standing. So we don't do walking meditation in the meditation hall, and we don't do yoga or exercise or hyperventilation or deep breathing or pranayama or anything like that. So contributing as much as possible to a silence in the meditation hall.
Just looking at the door.
Pardon?
Awareness of the door.
Oh, the awareness of the door. Apparently we have a noisy door here. And so opening and closing the door, really being mindful of opening it and closing it mindfully, slowly, and not letting it slam shut. And And again, that's very much contributed by coming right at the beginning of the sitting and staying right through till the end.
And what was it about? Did you say something about the door?
Yeah,
what is it about this?
They asked them to put this down to open the door.
Okay, did you mention that?
No.
Okay, so not to use a stone to hold the door open. So I guess sometimes groups come here and the door is making noise, so they decide to just prop it open to try and stop the noise. So not to do that, just to leave the door closed. And if it does make a little bit of noise, then we just be mindful of the noise.
Noise happening.
Okay, so sounds coming and going. And then, so all of this is the outer silence. And then there's the inner silence. And the inner silence is the silence, the quietness, which really allows us to pay attention within, to pay inward attention. And two things which can contribute very much to this inner silence, and most of us will notice when we begin the meditation, it's quite normal and quite natural to notice that there isn't much quiet. We notice that there's a lot of chatter, a lot of activity, and a lot of busyness of mind. And the activity of the mind, when we start to pay attention, can seem very noisy. And it's not that it's there because of the meditation. It's simply there because we're paying attention and we notice it. So most of the times our minds are chattering away and we just don't even know it's happening. And then when we stop and sit down and pay attention, we start to notice it, and internally we can start to seem very noisy and very busy. And two things that can contribute to this busyness and noisiness of mind are reading and writing. And so for the period of the retreat, I would very much suggest letting go of reading. Not to read during the period of the retreat. It's more a process of looking within and seeing what stories are already in there. Finding out what our own life stories are and not needing to read more and put in more ideas and more concepts and more stories. So just completely letting go of reading. And I would also very strongly suggest just letting go of writing. Not writing, because when we start to write, I write down one line, and then, no, I write it this way. And then that triggers another thought. Oh, I have to write this one down. And then, oh, yeah, and then there's this one, and this one. So letting go of the writing, and just not writing during these days. Sometimes people do find it helpful if maybe some insight comes in the meditation, or maybe there's something in the instructions or something in the talk that feels really important to you. And if you want to just write down one or two words, so that at the end of the retreat you can look back and you can read these one or two words, and then that will kind of be the reminder and trigger the feeling and the essence of whatever it was. So if you want to write down just one or two words or a few words, but really being mindful not to get into writing stories, writing books. Okay, and this very much contributes to a settling and a quieting and a stilling of the mind activity. So lots of words about silence. Okay. Anything
on the retreat structure?
The retreat structure. Yeah. Okay. All right. So just briefly, don't want to go on too late this evening. So just briefly, the retreat structure. I imagine you've seen the schedule for the day already, and particularly if it's your first retreat, to look at this schedule, it can look quite intimidating. And you see sitting and walking and sitting and walking and, oh yeah, lunch. And then sitting and walking, sitting and walking. And and it looks like a very full day, and it is indeed a very full day. But most people, there's the odd person who doesn't find it so, but most people find that it's not too difficult to really settle into a rhythm. And we have the bells ringing to let us know when it's time to come for a sitting, and there'll be a bell rung at the end of the sitting so we know that it's time to go for walking. And we'll give reminders from time to time, so it's not necessary to be concerned with the watch and with keeping track of time. We can just let go of time and really bring the attention into the present moment. And a major emphasis of the meditation practice is bringing the attention into just what's happening in this moment. And we find that the more we can bring the attention to the present, the more we can be focused on the present, the less we're influenced and affected in a negative way by what happened before or what's going to happen next. And so the less concern we have with, oh, how long this day is, or, oh, how that last sitting was so bad, I don't think I can ever do another sitting again, or, oh, I hope the next one is like this, or, oh, when are we going to get to walk? So really bringing the attention into the present, and the more we can do that, the more we can settle into just a real rhythm and a real flow of the day. And people often find that after a bit of a settling in process, the days just go by quite, I wouldn't necessarily say easily, but they go by. There's a flow, and the sense of time just begins to dissolve away. And so it's not such a burden. So allowing ourselves an opportunity to really settle in, and not being too hard on ourselves at the beginning, and not being too judgmental, and being watchful for any thoughts of, oh, I can't do this, I've got to go. But just giving ourselves a chance to settle and to establish a rhythm. And so the day primarily is alternating periods of sitting and walking, and occasionally we get to have a meal. And the instructions will be given, the main instructions for the day will be given in the first sitting after breakfast. And the first sitting after lunch will be a guided sitting. And during the guided sitting, throughout the period of the sitting, there will be some reminders to help us to come back to the present moment. And a little bit of instruction, and mainly just to help us to focus on what's actually happening right in this moment, right now. And the wake up will be at 6 o'clock in the morning, and that first period from 6 till 6:45 is an optional period. So some people may like to come in to sit, or some people may like to do some walking, or some people may like to use that period for some exercise, to go for a brisk walk, or to do some yoga or tai chi or whatever people would like to do for some exercise, just to help get the circulation going and get the body and the mind awake and alert. And then we can come in for the first sitting before breakfast. And then we go through the day in this way. And then there'll be the small groups during the day, and the individual meetings. And then each evening there will be a talk. And in the talks, the talk isn't a time for all of us to talk. It's a time for myself or Peggy to give a talk. And in the evening talks, we will attempt to talk about, to address some aspect of the meditation practice, some aspect of the teachings, and hopefully to clarify and to help bring some understanding to the process. And so that's the basic flow of the retreat. And of course, the schedule will always be posted, and we'll give reminders through the days. Okay, so I think enough said. So maybe if we could take 4 or 5 minutes just to have a little stretch. And I would say that the retreat has begun now, so the silence has begun. And so if we could take just 4 or 5 minutes to stretch, and then we'll have a short sitting with some basic instructions.